The poet John Greenleaf Whittier wrote these words nearly 200 years ago. Of all the words of tongue and pen, the saddest of these, it might have been. And that thought, I suppose, haunts every one of us in the fellowship of the withered hand, the choices I might have made, the gifts I might have given, the person I could have been, the father, the pastor, the friend, the whatever it is that you are. God does not want you to live in regret. And so God sends us wisdom. God doesn't want you to live in weakness. He wants you to live in strength. But the constant temptation in life is to think, my gifts, my strength are enough for me to live my life on. And if I can just get what I want, then that will make me happy. And that is not the case. And that brings us to Samson. Because actually, in the fellowship of the withered hand, where we're all like that guy in the story where Jesus comes, we have inadequacy, weakness, failure. And when we bring it into the light, when we do that together with each other and with God, then his strength comes to us. And this was a lesson that Samson wrestled with in enormous ways and only came to grips with at the very end in an ambiguous fashion. Samson, when you think of him, you probably think of the word strong. I remember quite a vivid experience. I may have told you about this. My wife and I were watching a movie one time, and it starred a guy who was very strong. He had a very impressive physique. My wife chose this movie. That kind of concerned me. And it happened in the mountains, so everybody in the movies wearing parkas, except this guy could not keep his stinking shirt on. And every other scene, there would just be muscles, biceps, deltoids rippling off the frame. I didn't like this movie. My wife finally looked over me and looked at him, and I waited eagerly to see what she would say. And what she actually said was, you know, I've never been attracted to well-built men. And I knew she intended that to be a compliment to me, but I could never quite connect the dots. Now, a lot of people, when they picture Samson, they picture a certain kind of physique, and that may well have been the case. But here's what's interesting. When the text talks about his strength, it will say, for example, that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily. Here's part of what you need to understand about Samson. We're going to get to this. It's not about the hair. It's not about the hair. When Samson was born, Israel needed deliverance from the Philistines, from their oppressors. And so God sent this little child to his parents and told them he was to be dedicated to God. He was to be what was called a Nazarite. That involved vows listed way back in the Old Testament book of Numbers, chapter 6. Never to drink fermented drink or wine. Never to touch an unclean thing or eat something that was unclean. And then never to have his hair cut. And those were to be expressions of the fact that he was devoted to God because God had given to him a purpose. And he was going to be one who would deliver his people. And so he sets out on his life, and yet he's a walking impulse control disorder. He ends up picking out a bride from a non-Israelite people that was going to lead him in wrong directions, and got really angry at the wedding feast, and blurted a secret to her that she used to betray him. That's an interesting theme. And so that was a train wreck. And then he ends up spending another night with a prostitute in Gaza, and that's kind of a train wreck. In both cases, it leads to him winning victories over the Philistines. So God somehow is able to use Samson, even in the midst of great dysfunction and moral chaos on his part. He's sometimes called a chaotic judge. That's Samson, chaotic judge. Saddest word of tongues or pen, it might have been. And finally, as you probably know, he ends up with Delilah. Now, by this time, he has broken the first vow. He has eaten honey from the dead carcass of a lion. So he's touched and eaten unclean thing. He has feasted and broken that second vow. It's implied of drinking fermented drink. He's got one vow left. And he marries Delilah. Their relationship is very interesting. The text says, in some sense, that he loved her. However, he does not trust her, and she does not trust him. The Philistines ask her to find the secret of his strength, and they offer to pay her. So she asks Samson, tell me what it is. And he deliberately lies to her, because he doesn't trust her. He's been there, done that, bought the t-shirt before. So he's in a relationship that is extremely ambiguous and very distant and very superficial. He's apparently content to kind of use her because he wants her sexually, but not to enter into a relationship of intimacy and honesty and trust that would require a certain kind of person. What might have been? What he might have known? By this time, he's been the leader of Israel for 20 years, but he's not helping Israel. There are no battles that he is winning. There is nothing that he is teaching, no justice that he's bringing. He's using whatever gifts and strength he has simply to maintain a pretty miserable user relationship with this woman whom he doesn't even trust enough to believe that she won't kill him. And so when she wants to know what the secret of his strength is, he tells her a lie. First one is, if you tie me with 7 fresh bowstrings. And so she does. Philistine's hiding nearby. He wakes up. And, of course, he's still strong. And so she says, you lied to me. Well, you know, she betrayed him. But she asks a second time. He gives her another bogus response. Asks a third time. Gives her another bogus response. Asks a fourth time. Just nags him until he's going to tell her. And this is part of what Eleanor Stump notes. Now, he does tell her part of the truth here. He tells her he was a Nazarite. That his hair was not to be cut. And that's true. Now, when he tells her this, he knows. He'd already been through this with Delilah 3 times. He knows once he goes to sleep on her lap, his hair is going to be cut. He will have broken his final vow. He disregards his purpose. He disregards his call to be devoted to God. It's like all for nothing. For what? And we're that way. I'm that way. However, when he wakes up, his response is not, well, my hair's cut, I guess I'm weak. When he woke up from his sleep, he thought, I will go out as before and shake myself free. He believed, Eleanor points out, he believed that his strength was still available to him. You know, his hair was an expression of his devotion to God. His hair was not the source of his strength. God was the source of his strength. But Samson had reached a place in life where he just felt like he was entitled to it. He could do whatever he wanted to do. He could follow whatever he wanted to follow. He could disregard God's purpose for him and pursue it. And I have my strength. I have my gifts. I will have my life. And finally, he wakes up. And he discovers, no, my strength was not my own. It is a gift that came to me. Whatever gifts I think I have, whatever you think you have, it is a gift from God. Your intelligence, your appearance, the people that you know, we get so deluded. And often the stronger we are, the more gifted we are, the more deluded that we get. There's a book about Joe Kennedy, he's a remarkable man of immense wealth and power, conquered Hollywood and had affairs with actresses, built a family dynasty that was like no other, admirable in some ways and broken like we all are in other ways. And then in 1961, his son is now the president of the United States. He has a massive stroke. This is what the author says. For 60 years, Joseph Kennedy had imposed himself and his will on family members, friends, acquaintances, those he worked for, with political associates, business colleagues, hundreds of topside, not-so-topside men and women he came into contact with. Now suddenly, on day 322 of his son's presidential term, 3 months into his 74th year, he was in an instant transformed from the most vital, smartest, dominant one in the room to a gnarled, crippled, drooling, speechless, wheelchair-bound, utterly dependent shell of a man. His right arm and leg were paralyzed. His right hand had frozen into a claw-like appendage, curled up at his wrist. The right side of his face drooped. He could not dress, feed, shave, or shower himself, could not communicate his thoughts, desires, fears, or hopes in spoken or written language. And he went on like this for 9 years until he died. The truth about every one of us is it is not about our strength, not about our giftedness, and we'll see how Samson ends up his life. But I just want to say to this, of all the words of tongue or pen, the saddest are these, it might have been, but our God is more powerful than regret, and he doesn't want you to live in regret today. So what do? Yesterday, I had a couple of friends over, and we were sitting in the backyard, and We recently had our backyard fenced in, so I thought it was secure for our dogs and they were running around. But it had been a little while since I had seen Cooper, who's still kind of a puppy. And when I called, he wouldn't come. And when I looked and walked the perimeter, he was gone. And it was horrible. And I started running around the neighborhood with a bag of treats and his little leash and just Cooper, Cooper, Cooper. And it was awful because just the thought of not being able to find him, you may know that feeling. And the thought of somebody I know and love who loves that dog so much and to be the one that lost him. And the good news was eventually animal control called and they had found him. And so the prodigal dog came home and I slayed the fatted calf and rejoiced. But of course, I thought about those stories in the Bible about the lost and the found. I was thinking about it later and then thought too, you know, the emotion wasn't even really about that. I thought about people that I love who are lost to me. Just come home, come home, come home. And that's the heart of God for you and the heart of God for me. God is like a shepherd going after that one sheep. God is like a woman turning things upside down to find that lost coin. God is like a parent that just keeps scanning the horizon every day. Maybe today, maybe today, maybe today. Would you come home? And so he is for old Samson. And even in the midst of Samson's great pain, the greatest pain that we experience is not the pain that comes on us as an innocent victim, not even the pain that Job experienced. The greatest pain is the result of what I do, where I mess up, where I use my gifts, my abilities, in disregard of God, just for my own agenda. And the text says it's so poignant, for Samson did not know the Lord had left him. And of course, that happened because Samson had left the Lord, had left God, did not care anymore about his identity, about his connection, about surrender to God. And I'm capable of that, and so are you. So the invitation today, come home. Old, old, old song I grew up with, softly and tenderly Jesus is calling, calling, oh sinner, that's me, that's you. Come on home. Just today, wherever you are, whatever's going on, when you find yourself tempted, when you find yourself deluded, thinking about life is about your strengths and your gifts and your agenda and your ego, and we all go there. We are all just crumpled up train wrecks because of sin. Today, just hear him calling. Come home. Stretch out your hands.
Hey, thanks for joining us. My name's Tim, and I'm a part of the team here at Become New. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes from John. You can also head to our website where we have hundreds more videos just like this one that you can browse and find something that's relevant to you and your life right now. You could also sign up there to receive the emails that go with each video or to get the daily text reminder or to browse our blog or other resources that we have there. Wanted to let you know that John is coming out with a new book titled Steps this February. The book's actually based on the series Ashes to Beauty that we did a few years ago, and we're really excited about it. You could go to Amazon right now and pre-order that book if you want, or check out all the details at our website, becomenew.com. If you've got a prayer request, there's a team of us that meet each weekday, Monday through Friday, to pray for viewers just like yourself. So be sure to text us that request at 855-888-0444, or you can email it to us at connect@becomenew.com. We're glad that you're here. We'll see you next time.